This program is provided by lawyer Kyung Jin Kim.
Imagine hiring a contractor to fix a simple leaky pipe in your kitchen, right?
Okay.
You hand them the keys, you go to sleep, and you wake up to find they have, they've autonomously demolished your entire house overnight.
Just because they thought the foundational plumbing looked a little outdated.
Right, exactly. Or, you know, imagine spending $28 million on a lawsuit just to force a tech company to reveal what they were doing behind closed doors. I mean, that is the reality of the artificial intelligence landscape we woke up to this week.
Yeah, we are looking at a fundamentally fractured reality right now. In one corner of the tech sector, we have this staggering explosion of new, highly capable models.
Right.
They're launching within hours of each other, just constantly pushing the boundaries of what machines can autonomously execute.
And then in the other corner.
In the other corner, simultaneously, we are seeing the fiercest pushback in modern tech history. Multi-million dollar legal battles, sweeping government regulations. They're actively trying to slam the brakes on this rapid expansion.
Yeah. Welcome to today's deep dive. We are navigating an incredibly dense, fast-paced day in the AI world for you. And to make sense of all this chaos, we are relying on a really comprehensive briefing report provided by lawyer Kyung Jin Kim.
Yeah, his analysis is fascinating because it perfectly captures this massive tension, you know, the tension between breakneck technological acceleration and intense legal friction.
Right. And by the time we wrap up this deep dive, you will understand not just the cutting edge tools that just dropped, like OpenAI's GPT 5.6 and XAI's Grok 4.5.
You'll also understand the lawsuits and the regulations that are literally rewriting the rules of how you interact with AI.
Okay, let's unpack this. We have to start with the catalyst for all these downstream effects, which is the sheer volume of new tech hitting the market this week. Starting with OpenAI.
Yeah, the foundational technology is moving at just an unrelenting pace. The flagship release this week is OpenAI dropping their GPT 5.6 suite on July 9th.
And is rolling out everywhere, right?
Everywhere. Globally, across ChatGPT, Codex, and their API as we speak.
And it's worth noting, this wasn't just some quiet update they pushed over the weekend. It actually had to pass a 12-day White House deployment gate.
Right, under the June 2nd executive order.
Exactly, before it could even be released to the public. So the government is actively monitoring these releases for safety. But OpenAI didn't just release one massive singular brain.
No, they didn't.
They gave developers a menu with three distinct tiers. You've got Sol, Terra, and Luna.
Yeah.
Why split the model up like that? I mean, why not just give everyone the smartest version? I kind of view it like a car dealership, right? Sol is the heavy-duty hauler, Luna is your daily commuter, and Terra is the highly efficient hybrid.
That's actually a perfect analogy. And to understand why they did that, you really have to look at the economics of artificial intelligence. The sheer processing power required to run these models on massive server farms is essentially the new oil.
Right.
AI companies are realizing they simply cannot give everyone unlimited access to their absolute smartest models without going completely bankrupt from the electricity and the hardware costs.
Because it's just too expensive to run.
Exactly. They are forcing developers to budget the model's brain power. Sol is the top tier, reserved for the absolute hardest, most complex reasoning tasks. Sol Pro is also available now for pro and enterprise users.
And then Terra?
Terra is the middle ground. It matches the performance of the older GPT 5.5, but at half the cost. And then Luna is the fastest, cheapest option designed for simple, everyday tasks.
Before we go further into the weeds on how developers use these tiers, let's clarify how they actually pay for this brain power. The pricing is listed in tokens.
Right.
So for example, the Sol tier costs $5 per 1 million input tokens and $30 for the output.
Mm-hmm.
For anyone listening who isn't a software engineer, what exactly is a token? Like, why is it the currency of AI?
Think of a token as a fragment of a word. A standard rule of thumb in natural language processing is that one token equals about 4 characters of text in English.
Okay.
So when you send a massive legal document into an AI that's your input, the system breaks all those sentences down into these tiny tokens to process the information.
I see. And then it generates the answer.
Right. The output, which is also measured and billed in tokens. Charging per token is basically charging by the syllable.
So it's usage-based.
Yeah. It ensures that someone asking the AI to write a 3-page essay pays significantly less than a corporation asking it to analyze 10,000 pages of financial records.
Oh, wow. Okay, so getting back to the prices you mentioned, Sol is $5 in, $30 out. What about the others?
Terra is $2.50 for input and $15 for output. And Luna is super cheap, $1 in, $6 out.
That makes total sense.
Yeah.
If you are analyzing a massive contract, you use the extensive SALT here because you need the deep reasoning. But if you are just summarizing a short email, you use the cheap Luna tier.
Exactly.
But beyond the text processing and the economics, what really caught my eye in this July 9th release is GPT Live. They completely replaced ChatGPT Voice with this full duplex voice model.
Yeah, full duplex is a critical engineering term here. It means the artificial intelligence can listen to you and speak to you at the exact same time.
Which is wild. The old interaction paradigm was like using a walkie-talkie. You press a button, you talk, let go, and wait for the AI to respond.
It was incredibly clunky. Now it processes audio streams concurrently. It adds conversational filler, you know, those little uh-huhs and rights that humans naturally use to show we are listening.
Yeah, just like we're doing right now.
Exactly. And if you pause to gather your thoughts, it senses that silence and just waits. Furthermore, if you ask it a highly complex question mid-conversation, it silently routes that query to the heavier GPT 5.5 model in the background without ever breaking the flow.
I have to push back a little on this implementation, though.
Sure, go ahead.
A machine that murmurs agreements and patiently waits while you think. Does that cross the line from a genuinely useful tool into slightly creepy faux human territory?
It definitely blurs the line.
I mean, it feels like we are engineering empathy where absolutely none exists.
What's fascinating here is that the AI industry is actively shifting its focus to address exactly what you are feeling. For the longest time, the race in Silicon Valley was purely about intelligence metrics.
Like passing the bar exam.
Right, scoring higher on a bar exam or a standardized math test. The goal was just to prove the machine was smart.
Mm.
But now the focus is shifting entirely to latency and modality.
Meaning how fast and how natural it feels.
Exactly. Seamless voice, instant generation, cheap speed. The ultimate goal for these companies is no longer just to build a smart oracle. It's to make AI an invisible, frictionless layer in your daily life.
Even if it's fake.
Yeah, it is supposed to feel completely natural, even if that natural feeling is a highly engineered fabrication.
And OpenAI certainly isn't the only one trying to eliminate that friction this week. The broader industry is rushing in. Meta just dropped its very first image generation model, Muse Image.
Oh, yeah.
And Google released Nano Banana 2 Lite, which generates complex images in about 4 seconds. We are seeing major U.S. research labs dropping massive foundational models in a single week.
It's a total avalanche. But while OpenAI seems hyper-focused on making AI sound more human in casual conversation, xAI is taking a completely different, highly technical route.
Right, handing over the keys.
Yeah, they are focusing on hard, autonomous execution. This brings us to the July 9th release of Grok 4.5.
So xAI trained Grok 4.5 specifically on Cursor development session data. Cursor being a highly popular AI-integrated code editor.
Right.
This means xAI fed their model massive amounts of data showing exactly how human software engineers write, edit, and debug code in real time. The result is a 1.5 trillion parameter model.
It's massive.
Give us some context on that size. How big is 1.5 trillion parameters compared to what developers were using just a year or two ago?
It is a massive leap in structural complexity. Think of a parameter as a single connection between neurons in a human brain.
Okay.
The early models that stunned the world a few years ago might have had a few billion parameters. Jumping to 1.5 trillion means the network's ability to recognize patterns, hold long-term context, and draw complex associations is exponentially denser.
It's on a whole different level.
It is the difference between a first-year computer science student who has read one textbook on coding versus a senior architect who has spent a decade encountering every strange, obscure bug in existence.
And they're definitely trying to prove that expertise with their benchmarks. Grok 4.5 hit 64.7% on SWE Bench Pro and 83.3% on Terminal Bench 2.1.
Yeah, those numbers are serious. And the pricing is competitive, too, at $2 to a million input tokens and $6 for output.
But again, let's translate those benchmarks for our listeners. SWE Bench isn't just a multiple-choice vocabulary test for an AI.
Not at all. SWE Bench forces the AI to solve real-world software issues pulled directly from GitHub repositories.
So actual broken code.
Exactly. It gives the AI a reported, a database failing to update under specific conditions and simply says, fix this.
It figures it out.
Yeah. Hitting nearly 65% on the pro version means this model is independently solving multi-file software engineering problems that would absolutely stump junior developers. And Terminal Bench 2.1 evaluates how well the AI can navigate a command line interface, you know, moving files and installing dependencies, just like a human operator would.
which leads to the most controversial part of this release. xAI introduced the Grok Build Terminal Coding Agent.
Right.
It integrates straight into a developer's workspace. You just install it via a simple curl command and then authenticate through the SuperGrok browser or by using the grok_code_xai_API_key for servers. And it's available for free for a limited time across all Cursor pricing tiers.
It's incredibly accessible right now.
But there is this feature called the /goal autonomous mode. It apparently runs continuously from planning a massive code overhaul all the way to execution, and you can just pause and resume it as it works.
It completely changes the workflow of software development. You give it an objective, and it navigates your files, writes the code, and implements the structural changes entirely on its own.
And this takes us right back to my earlier point about the rogue contractor.
Yeah, the demolition.
Giving an AI a /goal command and walking away sounds exactly like giving a construction worker a key to your house and letting them knock down walls while you sleep. I mean, is it actually safe to let an agent rewrite code autonomously across multiple files? What happens if it goes off the rails?
That is a massive concern, and xAI clearly knows it. That is why they introduced a feature called Plan Mode right alongside the autonomous capabilities.
How does that work?
Well, when you ask Grok to make changes across multiple files, Plan Mode forces the AI to generate a blueprint of the bulk edits first. You, the human developer, must review it and approve it step by step before the AI actually touches your code base.
Oh, I see. So you could approve the blueprint before the demolition begins.
Exactly. AI models lack true spatial awareness of a code base, and they still hallucinate. They invent facts or code structures with high confidence.
And that's dangerous.
Very. If it changes a variable in file A, but forgets that variable is heavily referenced in file B, the system breaks. If you let an agent run wild without a checkpoint, those hallucinations cascade.
Saving time on bad code.
Right. One bad line of code leads to another, and suddenly your entire software architecture is corrupted. Plan Mode introduces a necessary human-in-the-loop safeguard. You are no longer the bricklayer. You are acting as the site manager overseeing the autonomous workers.
If Grok is taking over the actual doing of the work, and we are just becoming the site managers approving the plans,
yeah.
It really forces us to look in the mirror, doesn't it?
It really does.
With AI mimicking human conversational empathy on one hand with GPT Live and autonomously coding our software on the other with Grok, what is actually left for us to do?
It is the defining existential question of this decade. If the machine can do the labor faster, cheaper, and more accurately, where does the human fit into the equation?
Exactly.
And Anthropic's newest release this week seems explicitly designed to tackle that specific psychological dynamic.
Yeah, on July 9th, Anthropic launched a new feature called Reflect in Beta. It's for free, pro, and max users. It is basically a dashboard that analyzes your past Claude usage. You can look at the last 1, 3, 6, or 12 months to see a breakdown of your active days, your peak times, and your working styles. And I should note, it specifically excludes any health-related conversations from its analysis, requiring the memory function to be turned on.
Which establishes a crucial privacy boundary.
Definitely.
Now, the technical implementation of a usage dashboard isn't revolutionary on its own. Every software platform tracks usage.
Sure.
But the way Anthropic is presenting the data is highly unusual for a tech company. The standout feature is that Claude actually uses this historical data to actively ask you reflective questions about your own workflow.
When I saw this, I honestly had to laugh. It asked things like, what tasks do you want to keep doing yourself, even if Claude is faster? It is literally a Spotify Wrapped, but for existential dread.
It really is.
I mean, playfully pushing back here, an AI prompting us to find meaning in our own manual labor is beautifully ironic.
This raises an important question about the psychology of AI adoption. Anthropic is looking past the immediate novelty of automation and focusing on human-AI collaboration longevity.
They want us to stick around.
Exactly. They are acutely aware that if an AI silently and efficiently strips away every single task a human does, the user is going to feel alienated, displaced, and ultimately deeply unsatisfied with their role.
So they're checking in.
By proactively asking what you want to keep doing, Anthropic is trying to foster a long-term partnership rather than a hostile takeover of your job.
They are trying to build a healthy relationship between the user and the tool.
Right.
But the irony here is just so thick. While Anthropic is trying to build healthy relationships on the user side, the very data these massive AI models are built on has deeply fractured relationships with content creators.
Yeah, the tension is boiling over.
The journalists, authors, and artists who actually made the human data that powers Claude, GPT, and Grok are furious. Which brings us to the massive legal friction we're seeing right now.
The friction on the creator side is intensifying rapidly. On July 9th, a powerful coalition, we're talking the New York Times, the NY Daily News, The Intercept, CIR, and Ziff Davis, filed a motion for sanctions against OpenAI before a federal judge.
Here's where it gets really interesting. In this filing, the New York Times revealed that they've already spent $28 million on AI lawsuits. Let that sink in.
That is roughly 38.8 billion won.
You do not spend $28 million on lawyers unless this is an absolute existential fight for your industry's survival against AI scraping your paywalled content.
The financial commitment is staggering, illustrating just how high the stakes are for media companies. But the core allegation in this specific motion could dramatically shift the legal landscape.
What are they alleging?
The publishers are alleging that OpenAI deliberately hid its ability to search its own training data and output logs for over 2 years, deliberately withholding those critical documents from the plaintiffs.
During the discovery process.
Right.
This is where the briefing report from former lawmaker Kung Jin Kim becomes vital. He points out something fascinating. This specific legal fight right now isn't actually about whether the AI model infringed on copyrights.
No, it's not.
It is not about how the model performs or if it copied an article. This is a fight about the duty of good faith in submitting documents during discovery.
Exactly.
For our listeners who might not be familiar with the American judicial system, what does the discovery process actually entail, and why is it so terrifying for tech companies?
Legal discovery in the United States is an immensely powerful and invasive mechanism. When you are sued in federal court, you cannot just hide your internal documents and pretend they don't exist.
Right. You can't just delete emails.
The discovery process legally forces companies to open up their servers, hand over their internal emails, and reveal their Slack messages to the opposing side's lawyers.
Wow.
The duty of good faith means you must honestly and thoroughly search your internal systems for whatever evidence the court asks for.
And the publishers are claiming OpenAI lied. They are alleging OpenAI told the court, "We can't search those logs," when they actually possessed the technical ability to do so the entire time.
Precisely. To neutrally synthesize former lawmaker Kung Jin Kim's point here, if this allegation is proven true, the court could issue sanctions equivalent to the destruction of evidence.
Which is huge.
Yes. That punishment could happen regardless of who ultimately wins the main copyright infringement argument. The integrity of the judicial process relies entirely on transparency during discovery.
So it's about the process itself.
In the legal world, the cover-up is very often punished far more severely than the initial alleged crime.
Former lawmaker Kung Jin Kim notes this is a stark warning, particularly for international and Korean companies that might find themselves facing U.S. discovery processes for the first time.
It's a very different system.
Right. Being honest and transparent early on about what data you can and cannot search is always cheaper than facing a delayed cover-up scandal later.
The U.S. is really relying heavily on the court system to figure out the boundaries of artificial intelligence.
Right. In the U.S., we are seeing this intense tech friction managed through massive, drawn-out copyright lawsuits and discovery disputes.
Yeah.
But over in China, they are managing AI fiction in a completely different way.
Yeah.
Through direct, sweeping government regulation, specifically targeting the emotional and psychological impact of AI.
The regulatory approach is entirely different. On July 15th, China's provisional measures for the management of AI anthropomorphic interaction services goes into effect.
That's a mouthful.
It is. And one of the most striking mandates in this measure is an explicit ban on virtual intimacy services for minors. The government is directly stepping in to regulate the psychological boundaries between humans and highly conversational machines.
And we're seeing tech giants scramble to comply with this impending deadline in wildly different ways. On July 10th, Alibaba abruptly shut down Qwen's human-like interaction features, along with their user-created agent features.
Just shut it all down.
Right. And they did this without announcing any data retention plan for the users who had spent months building custom bots on their platform.
Contrast that sudden shutdown with ByteDance, the company behind TikTok. Their AI platform, Doubao, is also disabling persona customization on July 15th to comply with the new rules.
But they handled it differently.
Yes. They are offering a read-only grace period until October 15th, giving users 3 months to access their past setups, save their conversations, and transition their data safely.
The difference in user experience there is staggering. Alibaba's approach feels like a landlord suddenly changing the locks on an apartment you spent 6 months carefully decorating.
That's exactly what it feels like.
ByteDance is at least giving you a few weeks to pack up your furniture. That abrupt shutdown by Alibaba has to severely damage user confidence.
It gets to the heart of the commentary provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim regarding user data rights.
What does he say?
He points out that when tech companies use regulatory compliance as an excuse to instantly claw back or lock away user-generated data without warning, they destroy the fundamental trust required for these platforms to function.
Because if users do not trust the platform, they simply will not build on it.
Exactly. If we connect this to the bigger picture, it reinforces a vital concept from lawyer Kyungjin Kim's analysis. Trust, not code, is the real moat for these AI companies.
It's all about trust.
You can have the most advanced 1.5 trillion parameter model in the world, but if users believe you might suddenly delete their personalized agents or lock their data overnight, they will not invest their time into your ecosystem.
Because the switching costs are too low and the risk is too high.
Exactly.
Yet, despite these strict new psychological regulations in China and the massive lawsuits in the US, the sheer volume of financial investment isn't slowing down at all. I mean, the World AI Conference, or WAIC, is happening in Shanghai from July 17th to the 20th.
The scale of WAIC is a testament to the unstoppable momentum of the hardware layer. Despite the strict regulatory environment, heavy investment continues.
Like what?
Well, you have Huawei unveiling the physical infrastructure of their massive Atlas 950 superpod.
What is a superpod?
To put that in context, a superpod is an immense interconnected cluster of AI chips designed to train the largest models on Earth. It is the massive engine room powering everything we've talked about today. Whoa. You also have the launch of the MiniMax M3 model, among over 300 new products making their debut, plus keynotes from AI pioneers like Richard Sutton and Yoshua Bengio. The foundational research is still charging forward, entirely undeterred by the regulatory friction above it.
So what does this all mean? We are clearly in a moment of extreme whiplash-inducing acceleration.
We really are.
We have models like GPT 5.6 pushing the absolute limits of compute efficiency with new full-duplex voice modalities, and tools like Grok 4.5 attempting to autonomously engineer our software right from the terminal.
Right.
But that breakneck acceleration is slamming headfirst into extreme friction, whether it's a $28 million discovery dispute from the New York Times or sweeping regulations shutting down anthropomorphic features in China overnight.
And as you navigate this chaotic landscape, and as you start integrating tools like Claude, ChatGPT, or Grok into your daily workflow, you have to be mindful of two crucial dynamics simultaneously.
Which are?
First, your reliance on the tech. How much of your core competency are you handing over to a machine that still needs a human in the loop to prevent cascading hallucinations?
That's a big one.
And second, the ecosystem itself. Who actually owns the data, the custom agents, and the workflows you are creating? As we saw with the sudden regulatory shutdowns, that ownership is far more fragile than we like to admit.
The technical structure of our AI future is being built at lightning speed, but the foundation of trust, legality, and human meaning is still very much under construction. Which leaves us with a final thought to mull over, building on Anthropic's Reflect feature and lawyer Kyungjin Kim's insight about trust being the ultimate competitive moat.
Let's hear it.
If trust truly is the real moat for AI companies, what happens to our own internal moats, our own skills, resilience, and critical thinking when we blindly trust an AI to do all the heavy lifting for us?
Right.
In a world where a machine can sound exactly like us, code for us autonomously, and even mimic human empathy, what is the one task you will absolutely refuse to hand over to the machine?
That's something everyone needs to answer for themselves.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the sources. Keep questioning the blueprint and keep exploring.
This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.